Good afternoon, everybody, and I say it's afternoon because it's about 5 seconds past noontime here on the East Coast, and we're going to travel to Santa Monica today to visit the folks at New Roads School, where academic rigor, diversity, and student well-being are all built in to the school, not only for a great school climate, but for academic success for the kids. And it's a K-12 school. We're going to talk about it with their head of school, Lutheran Williams, Daniela Panisse, who is their assistant head of school for programs, and then Mario Johnson, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Mario, who is the director of student well-being at Human Development. I'm Larry Jacobs, and as you know, we are the voice of equity and access here. That's the name of our online journal over at ace-head.org. Please go over there and see what we're doing. We just started an Equity and Access weekly newsletter. We changed the website around. The podcasts are all over there like this, but it'll be archived at ace-head.org. And speaking of student well-being, we now have our other website, which is called SEL Today. And that's at seltoday.org, but it's all linked over at ace-ed.org. Okay, we got a lot to talk about today here. I'm going to bring my three guests as we shoot across the country. They don't know it, but I'm in Maine, where it's, I think, 10 degrees outside today. All right. Lutheran, is the weather the same in Santa Monica, Lutheran Williams?
No, it's not quite 10 degrees here, Larry. It's a little bit warmer than that, and yeah. The sun is out.
As always, the sun's always out in Santa Monica, for goodness sake. It's a beautiful place. Welcome to you and Daniela and Mario. And Mario, while I've got you, what the, spell your last name for me. Or, say it.
Spell it, Larry? It's J-O-H-O-N-S-O-N, and it's Johansson.
Johansson. I wasn't sure if they had misspelled Johnson, okay, when I got my sheet. I just wanted to be sure of that. So it's great to meet you, Mario. Thank you. Okay,
likewise.
And Daniela? Yeah, and Daniela, welcome.
Thank you so much. And even though it's about 60 degrees here, I'm still freezing, so I would not survive on the East Coast.
Yeah, you would. You would survive, okay? My wife loves warm weather, too, but she survives as well, and it'll just make you feel really good about where you live. The temperature today was -3 when I got up at 6 a.m.
Oh, my God.
And I live in southern Maine. I live in southern Maine, so there you go. Okay, so hello, Californians. I'm glad it's raining out there for a change, okay? I went over to your website. I got to tell people about this. I went over to your website, which is newroads.org. I do suggest people go over there. It's a really great school. And when you put together academic rigor, student well-being, and I assume teacher well-being as well, all right, and put that all together with diversity, that's exactly where we want to be, okay, as far as I'm concerned. But you, I want you to give a little history of the school, Luther, and your head of school. But also, I use the term, or you use the term, authentic diversity. And diversity in and of itself is pretty darn good, okay, these days. But there's obviously something that means something more authentic to you. So, Luther, let's start. Tell us about the school, its history, and its diversity aspects. Go ahead, Luther.
Well, thank you, Larry.
Before I forget, is there a Philly connection? Are you from Philly?
I actually went to college in Philly.
Where are you from?
I'm from California, but I went to college in Philly for 4 years. And then I lived in New York, and I lived in Boston.
Ah, up here in Maine.
I went to UPenn.
Okay, so West Philly. That's where I grew up, in West Philly. There you go.
Yep, so I was right there.
you were. We're at 34th and Walnut, and I lived at 76th and City Line. So there you go. Okay.
I'm actually a native Californian, but it took a while to get used to the gray days and no sun. But I ended up staying there and making the East Coast my home.
Yeah, welcome to Philly. Gray days and no sun. Okay? But great steak sandwiches. Okay? So we'll talk about that at some other point. Now, tell me about New Roads School. Okay? Go ahead.
Well,
you're the boss.
The best way, I think, for me to talk about it is to talk about my own story. I'm African-American, and I grew up in Los Angeles. And, when my parents moved to Los Angeles from Louisiana, I mean, they wanted a good education for their kids. And I grew up in a working class black neighborhood, and my parents soon noticed that there was a big difference between the schools in African American neighborhoods in Los Angeles and the schools in the more affluent area. So they were able to get a house in a more affluent white neighborhood, and so
wow.
I was able to
wow.
get a
wow.
better education. And
that says it right there, education by zip code, my friend, but go ahead,
yeah,
please.
Yeah, and that's it. That's
yeah.
exactly it. And that stayed with me, Larry, and that's why I kind of struggled to find the right place to devote my life to. And then suddenly I found this school called New Roads, and it truly was a New Roads because even though I was like one of the few African American kids in my classes in school, you know, this was a school where diversity was not something that was compelled by the state, but it was something that the founders looked at and they said, you know, diversity is something that we can leverage to create the best possible educational environment for kids and to make this a thing called the Great American Social Experiment work. And they said, in fact, you know, it's not just having the diversity on campus, but it's actually sort of having kids sort of feel attached to their teachers and to the school in a way that they're seen and heard and valued and feel that they can show up as who they are. And if they can show up as who they are and encounter one another, that creates the best possible academic and educational environment. And so that assumption was built into the school from the start.
I absolutely agree with that, without question. And so what is the, if I may, and by the way, that word diversity can mean a lot of things. There's racial diversity, there's gender diversity, et cetera. Okay, well, what is the, can you tell us the demographics of the school?
Well, I think it started with us. It started with socioeconomic, racial, and cultural diversity because the founders looked around and they said there's no school in Los Angeles that offers a high-quality education rich in the arts to a population that looks like the city. And so their idea was to create a school that, you know, where, you know, 60% of the kids, you know, could pay the tuition and 40% were on financial aid. And to create, you know, a school of socioeconomic diversity where you have kids from the full spectrum of socioeconomic diversity, and that's true to today. And then I think because the school started with that inclusive climate and culture, other forms of diversity were able to emerge here. And kids were able to feel like they could be whoever they are, whether it had to do with sexual expression or gender expression, or whether it had to do with different learning styles, or any other variety of ways in which we're different by background, by experience, you know, by talent.
How do you use the diversity to make sure that the kids are immersed in it and understand how good it is? How does the school itself take your demographics and turn that into a lesson, if I may, in and of itself?
Well,
it seems to me, you know, diversity is good. Okay, diversity usually is pretty darn good. But when you approach it from that phrase you used, authentic diversity, okay, you're using it for something. You're using it towards a goal. Okay, and I like that about what you guys do. I may be misreading, but that's the way I'm reading what you fellows do.
I think you're right on target, Larry, because I think that, you know, we work a lot with a world famous personal neurobiologist, Dan Siegel, and he has this theory of integration where you honor the differences and you promote the linkages. And for us, the idea is that we honor each child. They're seen, they're heard, and they're valued. And we think that's the only way that the diversity can be leveraged for its educational value. It's not enough just to have the diversity, but kids have to feel confident enough and cared for enough that they're vulnerable enough to show up as who they are, whatever that means for them.
And it's you're K-12, right? You're a K-12
yes.
school. How many kids?
We have about 550.
And how many teachers?
We have about, I think, Daniela, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's about 80.
Daniela?
Yes, full-time, yeah.
Wow, that's a pretty good ratio. I love that. So actually, I'll throw that over to Danielle. Danielle, when you hire a teacher, what do you look for?
Well, we look for someone who has a sense, a relational sense, and attunement to other human beings because we are such a relational school. And we also, you know, we're a very intellectual group, so we like folks that enjoy evolving as educators who continuously want to learn. It's actually baked into our mission that we, you know, we as people should continue to evolve to meet the needs of our young people. And so we do want educators that understand the value of teaching young people who are really going to be our future. And yes, we're looking for the big piece for me is attunement, you know, what Lutheran was just speaking to, someone who can really have a relational sense and understand students at a very deep level, because those relationships are what really help our students make connections to the larger world.
It really does. And is your school, I have to ask this, you are a private school, am I correct?
Yes.
We are a private school, yes. Okay. Do kids board there? Do they come from outside of L.A., or is it all L.A. kids when they go home at night?
We do have an international. Yeah. We have international students. They don't board, but we have international students here.
Nice.
And we have students from 85 different zip codes in Los Angeles.
Great. And, you know, as I said that, are they all from L.A.? L.A. is so gigantic and spread out. It's like a whole
million
state.
People in L.A. County.
Yeah, it's like a whole state. So, yeah, I had to get that. And I have to ask you something, and I'll ask Lutheran this. Okay, Luther, you use, as I was on your website, I'm gonna read this as kind of your mission statement. We, the people of New Roads, liberate young individuals through the pursuit of justice, equity, and opportunity. I love that. Raising generations of powerfully compassionate advocates in an intellectual habitat. I love that. Driven by authentic diversity. Empowering them to disrupt systems. I love that. That produce inequality and build a more just future. Okay. I love your mission statement. Why do you use, this is a great question. I love this question. Why do you use the word liberate? That's a great phrase. Why liberate?
Why liberate? I think, Larry, it comes from, you know, when I think about the I think it's a different model for what education is, because I think that the old factory model was one size fits all, and our model is one where it's responsive to each individual kid, and the assumption is that each of them brings a gift. And it is the work of school, in the most classical sense of the word education, to help them to be able to express that gift and to show up as who they are in the world. So education, regardless of whatever they're learning, the curriculum, the teaching, it's a means for children to really come to understand themselves as people, what they care about, to understand what it means to be an informed citizen and member of a community, and what your responsibilities are for the common good. And so basically all schools can teach reading, writing, and math, but it's
right.
What are you putting those in service of? How are you making those relevant to what kids need to be in terms of citizens of the society and to be a part of a diverse workforce?
Right, it's nice when you said that beautifully. And I love that word liberate. I just wanted you to put some emphasis on that. And I think it's so important. I want to go over. I think this is Daniela. Okay. Daniela, what does the typical classroom look like? And I have to say something here. You guys are fully in favor of heavy duty academic rigor. All right. And I say this to a lot of generally. Especially in urban school districts, we tend to underestimate the intellect and knowledge of the kids, okay? And that's a challenge, all right? We have to stop underestimating that. And we do that by providing every kid with strong academic rigor. And that's what you folks are doing. And I want to hear as you run it, assist Luther in running the school, but you seem to be in charge of the educators there. Daniela, talk to me about academic rigor and the importance of that.
Well, what I can tell you, because earlier you mentioned our classrooms, and our classrooms are really small. I mean, we have a maximum of 20 in a class.
Yeah, it's perfect.
And, I want to touch base, too, on the word liberation because the way that our educators approach teaching and learning is really through what I like to call a liberated pedagogy. And so for that, our teachers are really thinking about what is meaningful, relevant, and connected for our students. And because the students arriving to our school are from so many different walks of life, the school really needs to address matters of diversity in the classroom and really rethink any traditional approach in teaching and learning. So our curriculum is really mind-based, and it recognizes our students' well-being at the heart of our teaching. So really we evolve our curriculum and assessment to meet our young people where they are. So that means that academic rigor is always at the heart of our teaching, but their humanity is centered in all of this, if that makes sense.
Sure, it makes sense.
So our faculty are really given the freedom to teach their curriculum and assess students in ways that really help them connect to their current realities. So I can give you an example of this.
I was just going to say, can you give me an example? Go ahead, do it. Yeah, go ahead.
Recently I was observing a sixth grade humanities English class, and they were exploring a text as sixth graders that was really meant for ninth or tenth graders. And the character in the story was experiencing isolation and othering at his school. And the teacher asked students to think about their own experiences at New Roads compared to the experience of the character in the text. And so the students sat in a circle, and they had a Socratic seminar about what they had read in the text and what their personal experiences were like. And one student shared his experience at New Roads specifically, and he mentioned how as a young white man, he felt that New Roads made him so much more aware of different kinds of people in the world and culture and really helped him recognize how to approach others. So he shared that in this way, he would never want to make another person feel the way that this person, this character in the book felt, so isolated, so othered, so alone. And it was really an experience of racism that this character had in the story.
Yeah.
And so she then connected it to what we like to call the way of the Jag. We're Jags here at New Roads. that's our mascot. And she had the way of the Jag up on the board.
Is that like a jaguar? Is a jag a jaguar?
Yes, the jaguar.
Yeah. Okay. As opposed to Judge Ashton in general, that TV show. Okay.
Those are shared intentions, the way of the jag are shared intentions that we have as a community for a positive climate and culture. And, the students then reflected back to some of the intentions that we have as a community, listen from the heart, speak from the heart. Be willing to listen to complementary and contradictory perspectives, listen without judgment, which is so, so hard. And, for me, that is academic rigor because the students are connecting to a text that is so much more challenging than truly what they're ready for sometimes, but they can get there because their experiences have already led them there. And that's the experiences that they're able to reflect on by being in a diverse community like New Roads.
I'd love to be able to offer another example because when Daniela talked about the liberation, the liberation, I think about, one of our students and she loved Shakespeare. She was just she's a middle schooler, and so she started the Shakespeare club in the elementary school, and she was reading the elementary school kids Shakespeare, and they were really with her because they were because she was so passionate. They had no idea what she was saying, but anyway, she was she had this Creative Links project that she did, and for the project she was obsessed with Elizabethan England, and so she created this corset to talk about the constrictions of a woman's body in Elizabethan England. Ooh. And then in the high school, she became a mixed media sculptor who actually explored the ways in which women's bodies are constricted in modern culture, and she became a presidential scholar in the arts. And I think that's really
wow.
that notion of the liberation, that we find, you know, what it is that it sparks in them, and we give them an opportunity in a climate and culture in which they can show up as who they are and have the support to really take that, you know, passion to the highest level. And I think, you know, Mario is the one who really is responsible for making sure that that climate and culture is a generative one, and both in the classroom and outside of the classroom, because for us, the whole campus and the whole city is the classroom, not just the four walls.
I can't tell you the power of community in this, okay? And too often the schools don't get that involved with the communities they're in. And it has to be – that's a good segue over to Mario Johansson, okay? Not a Johnson. Either way, would have been in my homeroom at Overbrook, okay? Mario Johansson, who's the director of student well-being. And we're very interested in this, Mario, because we have a website. We own a website called SEL Today. Social Emotional Learning, Student Wellness, School Climate. Okay? And I mean, that's top of mind all of a sudden for all the school districts in this crazy year we're having. Okay, talk about it, how it affects everything over at New Roads. Mary.
I just like to first just set a stage for some of the issues that our kids are dealing with today, you know, anxiety around racial injustice, environmental catastrophe, pressures around fitting in, individual anxiety, panic attacks, all of those kinds of things that kids bring to a high school space. And then when they enter high school, they have this need to feel like I have to fit in. I have to be what others want me to be. I have to step outside of myself in order to gain acceptance. So for us, all of this stuff contributes to what we call an amygdala hijack, right? It just kind of shuts the brain down. It promotes that fight or flight response before an individual even enters the learning context at a school. So for us, the climate and culture in which kids learn is critical. So we pay a lot of attention to this idea of climate and culture as the precondition for the learning experience. So that's kind of what my role really is focused on, because the heart of wellness really takes place in the context of climate and culture. And so our climate and culture can be distilled down to really three foundational integrative practices of human development. And the first is radical inclusion. Danielle has already talked, and Lutheran have already talked a little bit about this, but radical inclusion for us is all about the big embrace. The big embrace is positively encouraging students to express the uniqueness of their being in all its manifestations. So our working model is, if you're bold and courageous enough to show up as the individual you most genuinely identify as, whatever the social consequences, we're here for you. We got you. This is your tribe. Because we believe that when young people experience an enduring sense of belonging in an affirmative and inclusive environment, they're more willing to venture out of their comfort zone, take risks, find their purpose, and pave their own unique road. So I think of three kids that just kind of come to mind just quickly, Larry, when I talk about this, just to give you a picture of this. And one of them is a kid named Greg Baxton. And this kid was obsessed with military garb and military history. And literally, he showed up at school every day in 5th century military garb, 3rd century military garb, 17th century military garb, always accompanied by a story if you dare to ask him about it. And everybody was totally there for it. Everybody literally learned all of this through this living, embodied individual. You know, another student, Aliyah Davis, who is an African-American student, and in her senior year, it turned out that she was one of only two African-American female students in the entire senior class. At graduation, she shared on stage that she discovered the fullness of herself as a young black woman at New Roads. Through voice, activism, leadership, she graduated with a 4.0. And what really moved us is that she didn't necessarily need the presence of other black bodies to feel that she was being seen, heard, and valued. That she could feel that even though she was in an environment where she didn't see herself necessarily represented. It was a real testament to this matter of making kids feel comfortable with who they are, and diversity goes beyond just physical bodies being present that mirror ours. It really is about a big embrace and telling kids, we got you, relax and discover who you really are. So the second is a relational orientation. This is a piece Daniela talked a lot about already, is that we're very relationally oriented. Like, our teachers eschew any transactional exchanges with students, right? We don't do this whole thing, give me this for this. It really is about building solid, healthy, sustainable relationships. For example, our approach to discipline. It's rooted in restorative practices designed to teach kids to manage conflict by taking accountability for how they hold space in relationships with one another. And again, I have another example because I love my examples of my years of experience with kids, right? You know, we have a human development class where things get kind of rowdy, and there was one day where a black student, a white student were having a conversation about police abuse of authority, and it got very heated. So a lot of things were said. A lot of inappropriate things said. So the kids are sent to my office and they think they're in trouble. They get to my office and it's like, it's not about being in trouble. It's about listening and hearing each other. How do we slow the tape down and get an opportunity to actually hear one another? And so to hear these two students go back and forth and really use the tools of counsel to engage one another and to really listen to one another and to leave that space really with an intact and healed relationship such that they honor one another's differences, but they also are promoting the linkages between the two of them.
How'd it work out? How'd it work out at the end?
Let's put it this way. Those two went to prom together, and then I think they kind of continued things on a little,
okay.
a little bit thereafter. It is after high school, Larry.
Yeah, I know it is. I have to ask, what happened to, you mentioned his name, Greg, the kid with the Army uniforms. Did he join the Army?
No, he's at Swarthmore right now. He's at Swarthmore College.
He's where?
No, he did not.
He's at Swarthmore in Philadelphia.
That's really great. My brother lives literally one block from Swarthmore. Literally.
Yeah,
his backyard is part of, right onto their campus. Okay, how about that?
It's become a very popular place for a lot of our kids because they think of it as really the climate and culture there as resembling, you know, New Roads, especially the intellectual climate and culture. Because, you know, as Mario said, I mean, when I would sort of, you know, I went into the college office one day and this student who with the military garb happened to be there, and I asked him one question, and we ended up sitting for 2 hours while he lectured me about the military, you know, because I asked him who was the best general in World War II, and he's like, that is so complex. He's like,
he's right. But did you come to an answer? Did he give an answer to that? I'm just curious.
Well, he actually didn't. What he did was he defined for me the criteria, and he's like, by the time we had finished the criteria, he'd gone through all the criteria after analyzing, you know, the history of World War II, then we'd run out of time because I had another meeting.
Yeah, that's too bad because it's probably Rommel and Patton when all said and done, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, to be fair, okay, you have to think of both of them. I have to ask something. You just kind of answered the question. I'll say it this way. We need more schools thinking the way you think. And when I talk to public school administrators, superintendents, state superintendents, teachers, they all want school to be like the way yours is. Okay? They want to recognize the kids' differences. They want the kids to be successful. They want the kids to feel like they belong and that they're worth something. And Luther, I'm going to ask you this question, okay? How can we take what you folks are doing, okay, as a private school, okay? And I think it's great, by the way, okay? And by the way, my kids went to private school for a lot of their education, all right? How do we translate that into public schools?
Well,
you
I
went
think
to public
that,
school, so did I. I
attended public school until 10th grade, and then I went from 10th to 12th on a football scholarship to...
To where?
To a private school in Los Angeles called Montclair Prep, which no longer exists.
Yeah, you're paralleling my son. Same thing.
Yeah, and so I was a public school kid. I think, and I also studied public education in graduate school. That was, you know, and I think there are a couple of things that I think we need to look at. And I think one of them is the size of the public schools. You know, I think that the size makes it very difficult to have a human-centered program. that is responsive to each individual student. I mean, I was just talking to a public school colleague the other day who told me, you know, he has 200 students that he teaches each day for English. There is no way for him to develop that kind of approach. He can't even read all their essays. And so I think size is one piece, but I think also site-based control. I think that our system is so bureaucratic, and we have gotten to the point where we don't trust our teachers. They're basically given scripts, and they're forced to teach to test, and then that forces them to be disengaged and to feel constantly disrespected. And I think also are expecting the schools to solve all the societal problems. Because, you know, the schools are, you know, the school expertise is in the academic realm and really kind of, and also developing citizens. And I think that, you know, if a child is hungry or a child is having, you know, a trauma, experiencing trauma at home, or, you know, there are nutritional issues, you know, I think there are any number of issues that are coming to public school. And I think we need a wraparound approach where we really integrate public schools with other agencies to support children from the very beginning, because we know that, you know, to level the playing field, that has to start as early as, you know, as a prenatal.
Yeah, I was just going to say as early as early.
You know?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Unbelievable.
Like, if we're truly serious about it, and I think we have to stop just blaming the public schools and saying, look, are we willing, do we have the will of the society to do what it takes to raise the kinds of citizens that and workforce that we need to keep this country, you know, prosperous and to keep it so that it can, you know, that we're serving the common good and we're not losing potential? Because I think
that's
New Roads is built on this assumption that children have infinite potential. And it comes out in so many different forms, and schools should be incubators of that potential. And I think in some ways we've handcuffed our teachers. And I think
we'll go back to your word liberate. Okay. You know, we handcuff people with the bureaucracy. You're not a bureaucracy.
No, and that, and yes, and that's why I'm not in public education, to be honest.
I know. I know. Okay. And you know, we already know, okay, and I say this to all three of you and my audience, you already kind of know what works, all right? If you had to, Daniela, what's your – I don't know how you measure this, but I'll ask the question. Of your graduates, what's the success rate, if I could use that term, okay, which is an odd term, but just think about that. Are the kids successful as adults?
I think our students are extremely successful, and we've heard from, you know, just reflecting back on universities that our students have applied for, we always hear back that our students have just such a strong sense of self and really know themselves in a way that other students just don't. And the stories that our faculty and our college counseling team the way they're able to describe our students is just unheard of. I mean, we've actually received letters from colleges and universities telling us that we really know our students at a level that is just unheard of. And I think it really, because we respect our faculty, just, you know, adding on to what Lucerne was just talking about the bureaucratic system in public schools, you know, here our faculty obviously are teaching the skills necessary for our students to succeed, but they also are given freedom with their curriculum. And that freedom allows for them to explore deeply with our students and figure out, you know, what their individual needs are. And that respect of self, not only for the students, but for our faculty, really allows for this. I mean, it is an incubator of human potential, and it's a place where people are allowed to explore and tinker and play and enjoy learning. And that's what learning is. Learning is fabulous and exciting and fun, and that is what you see here when you walk around in the classroom. So it really leads to, I would say all of our students are successful past New Roads because, you know, they just have such a deep understanding of who they are. And
Well, let me ask the question a different way, okay? beyond college or whatever, workforce, okay? And this is, you know, one of the roles of schools, it's to create good citizens, and, it's to critical thinkers, but our job really is to people into the workforce, whatever they wind up doing through their lives. Okay,
yeah, I can answer that one, Larry.
Go ahead.
I mean,
how
I
are
think
they
that
doing
100%,
work-wise?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, we have a large contingent of our students who are first-generation college students, and it's 100% go to college. And and we have a huge number of our families, or a significant number of our families, where the families make under $50,000 a year, and all of those students go to college.
Wow,
and,
it's huge.
And so I think the other piece of it is, you know, people are most familiar with one of our highest profile graduates, although to me she demonstrates many of the qualities that most NewRed students demonstrate, which is incredible poise and a sense of an authentic sense of self, and that's Amanda Gorman.
She went
K-12 to NewRed. She was someone who I think her, you know, she was supported in really, you know, finding her voice and finding her passion, which happened to be writing. And she was nurtured to become confident in the young person that she is. And people have remarked to us on how poised she is, how she was at the inauguration.
Exactly.
And I said, that is very much the NewRed brand. You know, the kids, they have that kind of poise. And they also, they have the growth mindset. You know, I think that word's so overused, but the kids here understand that mistakes are essential to growth and
Absolutely.
That you must be vulnerable and to go into uncharted places. They are taught, and so they bring with them creativity and innovation to whatever profession they're in. And I think it makes them leaders. And so... one of our kids, you know, he's a senior. He just decided he was going to do for his independent study. He was going to study Shakespeare. And so one of our teachers,
another
Shakespearean expert.
Another Shakespearean.
And he studied The Tempest, and he ended up realizing that it was a pro-colonial work. So he ended up reading Aimé Césaire's The Tempest in response. And then he ended up creating an album in which he learned different languages and used different genres, including rap and classical, to actually speak to Shakespeare's text.
And if I may, can I say something? My favorite movie, okay, my favorite movie, you're going to laugh on this, okay, is a 1955 sci-fi movie called Forbidden Planet. Now, you tell that kid to watch that movie. It's on TCM every so often. And Forbidden Planet is the sci-fi version of The Tempest, where the magician loses control of his powers.
Wow.
Okay? It's based on a Tempest, but it's sci-fi.
I'm going to have to send you his album, too.
Forbidden Planet. You tell him. And it's a high-quality movie, by the way. It's a real movie. It's good.
Well, we're going to have to send you – I'm going to tell him to watch the movie, and I'm going to watch it myself. But I'm going to have him send you his album, too, to listen to.
Please do. Please do. Okay? But The Tempest, you hear that, Daniela? Forbidden Planet.
Yes, I'll remember that because that's my
Trust
husband's favorite
this.
Comic shop in New York.
Mario, Forbidden Planet, my favorite movie. I watch it all the time on TCM.
Okay. I got you, Larry.
Okay. We got to go. You guys are really doing a good job out there. You're really doing a good job. And, I love doing a show like this because – the potential of education is unlimited, and I'll say the word, we have to get out of that bureaucracy. And this pandemic, as nuts as it has been and continues to be, hopefully will engender some change out there. And I think it's doing that. It's going to be painful for a while, but I think it's going to make some change. All right, you guys are showing it can work. I really mean that. So congratulations to NewRed, Luther, Daniela, Mario. Now go take the day off and watch Forbidden Planet.
All right.
Trust me on this.
Thank you, Larry.
Write me back, edutalklarry@gmail.com. Okay? Write me back. Tell me how much you love that movie. Okay?
Okay.
Absolutely.
Will do. Be good, guys. Take care. Enjoy that nice weather out there. I'll think of you.
Well, bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Now, are they great or what, everybody? That's the folks from New Roads School. Check it out at newroads.org. And we're going to archive this one over at ace-ed.org. All about equity, all about access, great stuff for you, including our magazine, our newsletter, and all about SEL with our link to SEL today. Thank you, New Roads. All right, great stuff. All right, we'll archive over there. Thank you for listening. My name's Larry Jacobs. You guys have a good, safe day.